So we were in the New Testament this morning. Tonight we're in the Old Testament, and I would like to encourage you to turn to Ecclesiastes, the first chapter. We're going to read the first several verses, actually 1 through 11 in Ecclesiastes. I'd like to ask you to keep your Bibles open because we're going to be, in the course of time, looking at some verses also in chapter 2. We're going to read two sections of chapter 2 as we try to make our way through our time of reflection tonight. Ecclesiastes 1 begins with these words, "The words of the teacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem." And then it opening in verse 2, it's pretty bleak. "Meaningless, meaningless," says the teacher. "Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all of their labors at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow out into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again." In other words, everything is this repetitive, endless cycle. Verse 8, "All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, 'Look, this is something new'? It was here already long ago. It was here before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them." I've often made the statement that three generations from now, no one will know us other than our name. And this is what Solomon is saying here. No one remembers the former generations, even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. Does that leave you with that impression? It's like, do we really have to look at this passage tonight, Pastor Jack? Let's look at something just a little bit more inspiring. But we are going to be looking at this passage because it has something to say to us tonight. I don't know if you've been in a sports store lately or if you've been in a fitness center. I can honestly say I haven't, but probably should. But there's a wide array of exercise equipment out there, right? Wide array. And, you know, there's a treadmill, and there's a Stairmaster, and there's the recumbent bike, and there's the stationary bike, and there's the ski machines. And, I mean, it keeps going on and on and on, all designed to help you to become fit and to stay fit. And so you get on them and you spend a lot of energy, right, which is exactly the point, but you end up going where? Nowhere, right? Of course, because that's the way it's designed. Every time Sandra and I step off the treadmill in our basement, we find ourselves in the very same place as when we started. Of course, by design, right? Which is the way life seems to be for some people. Or maybe Solomon would say, hey, for me, in my old age, as I reflect on life, maybe for a lot of people, you expend a lot of energy in life, but hey, where do you end up? You know, same place where you started. So what's the point? What is the point of all of this? It's kind of meaningless. That's how he starts out in verse 2. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. You know, there are people who get up in the morning, they go to work, and then they come home, and then they watch TV for a couple hours, and then they go to bed and sleep, and then the next morning they start all over. Probably there are some other activities in their lives, but this is how it seems to them, to be an endless repetition of days that don't really have much substance to it, that don't account for much. Life doesn't seem for them to have a lot of meaning and a lot of purpose. It's mostly filled with repetitive activity. A lot of energy, but hey, in the end, in the final analysis, what comes of our lives? Missing in all of this, and also for Solomon here, this is really Solomon's journal, missing in all of this is the sense of value. It's the sense of meaningfulness. It's the sense of worth and significance. Why am I here? What on earth really has value? And what gives life meaning? And there's a sense that there must be more to life than what I am now experiencing. Nothing that we can quite put our finger on because it's kind of a nebulous thing, you know, nor do we know where to find this elusive quality by which I can find fulfillment and meaning and purpose in life. I don't know if you have at times wrestled with these kinds of feelings or these kinds of issues. And in some of your more candid moments, you've wondered with a lot of people, is this all there is to life? Really? Is this all there is? Now, these are not new questions, of course. They've been questions asked by people down through the centuries, and certainly Solomon all of those years before the life of Christ. Solomon is looking back, as I've already alluded to, in his life, and he's doing so with a fair bit of regret, a regret at the emptiness and the shallowness of his life. And so he says, meaningless, meaningless, utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all of their labors at which they toil under the sun? Asked Solomon. There seems to be no purpose for our struggle in life. In Hebrew, the literal meaning of the word meaningless is closer to the meaning of breath, what we know as the word for breath. So you think about your breath on a cold, frosty morning. It's just vapor, and in the midst, in a second, it disappears, just like the mist, says the psalmist, that is here one moment and then the next moment is gone. Life seems meaningless, says Solomon, an endless repetition of a cycle. Generations come and generations go. People come into the world and people die. And then, of course, there's another generation that takes their place. The wind blows in circles, says Solomon. The river flows into the sea, and then the evaporation process takes place, and the water lifts up into the clouds, and the clouds go over the land, and then they dump the water onto the land. Though that water makes its way into the drains and the streams and the creeks and then the river and then in the sea, and the whole process repeats itself again and again. Reminds me of that song, tote that barge, lift that bale. You get a little drunk and you land in jail. Hearts get weary and sick of trying. I'm tired of living but scared of dying. But the old man river, he just keeps rolling along. Depressed yet? Yeah, feeling overwhelmed by the meaninglessness of life under the sun, as Solomon puts it. Well, okay, what about pleasure? Can we find meaning and happiness in pleasure, in the good times of life? Well, if you look at chapter 2, he Here's what Solomon says. Let's read the first 8 verses together. He says, I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is madness, and what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine, embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of their lives. So I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water the groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired male and female singers and a harem as well, the delights of a man's heart. And for a while, it all seemed to work. Verse 10, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all my toil. But pleasure and things did not bring lasting purpose and meaning and fulfillment to his life. As you can see by verse 11, in the final analysis, he says, when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. Under the sun. A life built on pleasure becomes relentlessly boring after a while, leaving one to wonder, well, there has to be more to life than this, because pleasure doesn't give any sense of significance. It doesn't give any sense of making a contribution here. It doesn't give you any sense of accomplishment here. There must be more to life. Pleasure provides happiness for a while, but it doesn't satisfy. Look what Solomon says here in verse 8. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of hearing, the ear its fill of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. In other words, pleasure never seems to satisfy. If pleasure is the aim of our lives, then it always leaves us feeling unsatisfied and empty. Well, what about possessions? Because he talks about possessions here, right? He talks about the things that he built, the things that he earned. Can we find meaning in possession and things? Solomon thought so. So he undertook these great building projects, which he speaks of here. He built these lavish gardens surrounded by parks. And he built fabulous homes. He built this huge herd of animals. In fact, herds, plural. He amassed, he says, vast sums of wealth in gold and silver. But alas, that too failed to provide a sense of meaning and accomplishment. He says later on in verses we haven't read, I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun because I must leave them to the one who comes after me when I'm no longer here, in other words. And who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish, and yet they will have control over all the fruit of my toil into which I have poured all of my effort and skill under the sun. So this too is meaningless. Reminds me when I read these words, when my father-in-law was still with us, he told us about his former boss, a very wealthy man, who lived well into his 90s, and he was building a 15 million-dollar house on a new estate that he had purchased and begun to develop on the east side of Grand Rapids. And he, every day in his 90s, as he was building this, he drove out every day to inspect his property. And he lived for that house that he had conceived and had an architect draw up and was prepared to fully finance in cash. And as my father-in-law was talking about this, because he was his boss in years past, I couldn't help but think to myself, well, what is the point? Because this man is well into his 90s. How many years is he going to be able to live in this $15 million house with this lavish estate? I mean, you can't take it with you, right? And this man who founded one of the largest steel fabricating businesses on this side of the state died before his dream house was finished. And you know what? He was buried in a casket 6 feet underneath the ground with nothing other than the clothes that he was wearing, just like you and me. So in the final analysis, what really was the point? Well, what about wisdom, Solomon wonders? Is that where meaning is found? So if you look at chapter 2, verse 12 with me, then I turn my thoughts to consider wisdom and also madness and folly, which would be the opposite of wisdom, of course. What more can the king's successor do than what has already been done? I saw that wisdom is better than folly, just as light is better than darkness. The wise have eyes in their heads, while the fool walks around in darkness. But I came to realize that the same fate overtakes them both. Then I said to myself, the fate of the fool will overtake me also. What then do I gain by being wise? And I said to myself, this too is meaningless. For the wise, like the fool, will not be long remembered. This is the second time he points that out, isn't it? We read that also in verse 11. For the wise, like the fool, will not be long remembered. The days have already come when both have been forgotten. Like the fool, the wise too must die. So as with wisdom, you know, Solomon is turning here, and then he's turning there, and then he's turning there, looking for ways to find significance and meaning in life. And so as for wisdom, he's finding too that though initially, hey, this might be the answer that I've been looking for, he's encouraged, but then when he thinks it through, he realizes that human wisdom can only go so far. Like the fool, he says, the wise man too must die. Well, what about prestige? You know, what about, I mean, can power and status provide meaning and purpose? Look what he says in verse 9 of chapter 2, I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. And yet, ultimately, prestige and status is also meaningless. How many celebrities that were once highly acclaimed and envied, but now are never heard of? How many former government leaders, once always in the spotlight, in a position of power, are now totally forgotten? Maybe just a footnote in the annals of history, and who cares about history anymore anyway? Except for me. You can feel the regret and you can feel the remorse flowing from Solomon's pen here in his journal. So much of his life had been driven by the pursuit of things, the pursuit of pleasure, the pursuit of earthly wisdom and prestige. So much of his life had been lived for himself. All you have to do is to go back earlier in the Old Testament, and then you'll see that was so true. And what had it gotten him? What did Solomon in the end achieve? Nothing that would ultimately make that much of a difference. There was a time in his life when it was so promising, and his heart was wide open to the Lord. But much of his life, not so much. All of the wealth he had amassed, all of the pleasures that he had pursued, and the experiences were meaningless without any lasting value under the sun. Philip Berman, in his book, The Search for Meaning, talks about a 40-something Wall Street trader for a large brokerage house. He had a hefty income, which allowed him to maintain a rather well-appointed Upper East Side apartment. And it was filled with high-tech toys. This man had planned to quit the Wall Street trading at the ripe old age of 40 because he could afford to, but alas, he couldn't quite bring himself to do that, and he was still hanging around, as Philip Bierman points out in his book. And in his more introspective moments, this man wonders. In fact, these are his own words. He says, this is that 40-plus, now older, trader. He says, I've always felt that there was something that I could do and then feel like what I was doing had some tangible benefit and would actually make a difference in society. But you know, trading doesn't have any tangible benefit, in my opinion. I mean, it serves a purpose for the economy, yes, but I don't think of myself and my role in the trading business as doing a lot for society. If I'm honest, I'm really doing a lot more for myself. There is this lack of purpose in my being. I don't understand why I'm here. And you know, the truth of the matter is, I don't really try because I think it would be futile. But there is this big hole in my life as I wonder about the meaning of my existence here. Is there any way off the treadmill? Is there no hope? Is there no meaning? Is there no purpose in life? Is Solomon right? Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun? My question is, however, is this world under the sun all there is? Or is there more to our existence under the sun beyond what we can observe and beyond what we can experience here? And it's an important question that brings us to the last chapter of Ecclesiastes, the last chapter in Solomon's journal. Solomon is writing as an old man here, and his days are ending, and he knows that. He wants only to say one thing, and this is the one most important thing that he wants to say, and that is simply this: remember your Creator in the days of your youth. In other words, don't waste your life. Don't waste your time with insignificant and the meaningless as I have done. The earlier you recognize this, the better. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Don't wait till you're an old man on his deathbed like me. See, life without God is meaningless. That is the central focus, the central point, the essence of the message of Ecclesiastes, boiled down into one sentence. life without God is meaningless. The book of Ecclesiastes tells us that we were never meant to live for ourselves. Wow. We live in a culture in which life is all about us. We live in a society that says we are everything. It's all about me. And Solomon would say, wait a minute, I used to think that too, but now I know differently. We were never meant to live for ourselves. We were never meant to live apart from God. From the beginning of time, you and I were meant to live with God. Our hearts, our lives, our soul were meant to be aligned and entwined with God. From the very beginning, our identity, our purpose, our meaning, our sense of fulfillment in life was meant to be found in God. Westminster Shorter Catechism, first question and answer. Do you know what the question is? Any of you? My quiz. Do you know what the first question and answer of the Heidelberg is? Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know you know that. How about the Westminster Shorter Catechism, which is equally as profound, Gord? Here it is, because we've all heard it. What is the chief end of man? In other words, what is our purpose in life? Why are we here? And the answer is, what's the answer, Gord? Yeah. Glorify God and to enjoy Him forever. Isn't that a marvelous statement? We ought to commit this to memory too. We were created to be in relationship with God. We were created to know God. We were created to delight in God. We were created so that God could delight in us. Now, isn't that something? God taking delight in us. We were created to bring God glory and the offering of our lives to Him in love and obedience, to join Him in the work of redeeming and renewing this world and the people who live in this world, wherever God has placed us. And in doing so, we give God glory. We were created to enjoy God. You enjoy God? I mean, we get it. We were created to serve God, right? We were created to live obediently before God. We get that. We were created to join God in His work of renewal. But the Westminster Shorter Catechism says we were created to glorify Him and enjoy Him, to bask in His love for us, and just to enjoy it. Is where true meaning and purpose is found in life. You and I were created to be aligned and entwined with God such that we do love Him and serve Him and obey Him, but also we just enjoy Him. Isaiah 43, God speaks and he says this, "Bring my sons from afar and my daughters from the ends of the earth, everyone who is called by my name, whom I have created for my glory." You were created to give God glory. You were created so that God could delight in you. And then this passage that we read and thought about this morning, Ephesians chapter 1, "For he chose us in him before the creation of the world to be holy and blameless in his sight. In love he predestined us for the adoption," there's that word again, "to sonship through Jesus Christ in accordance with his pleasure and will, all to the praise of his glorious grace." Anyone here feeling, anyone here struggling with feelings of inadequateness, feelings of insignificance? I think we have to let these words sink into our consciousness. You're a child of God. You were created to bring God glory and to delight in him like nothing else that he ever created. God never meant for us to live in a meaningless, circular, under-the-sun existence. In fact, he never created us to be earthbound people. We inhabit this earth, this world, for just a very brief time. In the grand scale of time and eternity, our... what is it? How old are you? How many years do you have here? It's just a snap of the finger, right? It's just like a 1,000 years, says the psalmist, is but what? I mean, our time here is just a very brief moment. On the grand scale of time and eternity, we were never created for an under-the-sun, earthbound existence. We are people who are not meant to be earthbound. Which is the reason, of course, that Jesus came into the world to free us from the constraints of sin that bind us to the under-the-sun life. Jesus Christ went to the cross to pry loose sin's grip. He rose from the tomb. He defeated the power of death. Right? So one day when I am lowered, my body is lowered into the grave and the earth is placed over me and I am 6 feet under. That is really not the end of my existence here. Neither is it the end of your existence either. Nor the existence of your loved ones. We are not bound by this earth. Jesus Christ came to free us from the tyranny of the here and now existence, to free us from the entrapment of this repetitive, meaningless existence, and enable us to live lives that have meaning and significance, lives that are going somewhere, lives that give God glory, lives that experience the joy of being an adopted son and daughter, lives that partner with God in redeeming and reclaiming this world of his, because after all, he is on this mission of making all things right, and we join him in this mission of making all things right, do we not? In whatever occupation and vocation we find ourselves, in whatever realm of life we are in. It is our purpose in life. It is our reason for being in life. Do we have significance? Of course we do. We're his adopted sons and daughters. saved by the blood of the Lord, called to make a difference. What a contrast between the hope that we are infused with and Solomon's very bleak words, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Everything is meaningless under the sun. So sometimes feel like you're on a treadmill. I just have this picture of Solomon in his last days of his life, on his deathbed, looking up and pleading, "Listen, don't be a fool. Remember your Creator. Without God, your life will be meaningless." So God says to us tonight through His Word from the book of Ecclesiastes, center your life around Me. Stop looking here and there and everywhere. I'm the answer. Cast your eyes on Me. It'll make all the difference. Let's pray. Thank You, Lord, that we are not a people without hope, and that we need not look at life and wonder, as so many people do, where is real life? What is significant? Where do I find meaning and purpose? The truth of Your Word this evening is pretty crystal clear. Thank You for reminding us this morning and now again who we are and what we are called to do. More importantly, what we are called to be. As we give You glory and enjoy You forever. Amen.